I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside just outside of New York City and from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Hey, Andrew. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, more importantly?
I think I'm coming around. I feel better today than I did yesterday, which is good. I would say in modern parlance, he's trending in the right direction.
Ah, yes. Jesus this Christ. Pod was, if people were wondering where this podcast was this week, we had a day's delay.
We did.
Because someone was violently ill.
Oh my God. So Monday night, Martin Luther King Day, I went out to watch. And I say I went out, don't take this as me taking time off because I got absolutely hammer drunk and wasn't able to function. I wish that were the case because I know how to feel better in those scenarios. This was me just going to watch Eagles and Bucks. And so I watched the Eagles and the Bucks, enjoyed it immensely. And then I went home. So Monday night into Tuesday morning, woke up and I put it this way. All of my insides wanted to be on the outside through my mouth. That's the best way to put it. I don't want to go into too much details. And it wasn't just a case of, oh, well, there's going to be one round of this. There were between 3 and 4 rounds of this throughout the night. It was, I don't generally get sick. I'm thank God, touch, knock on wood. It doesn't generally happen to me except when I get COVID or whatever it was. But this was awful. It was truly awful. And I don't think it was food poisoning. You always hear around this time of year, oh, the winter vomiting virus and stuff like that. And
I'm not familiar with that. That doesn't sound very scientific.
Well, you've never heard of that. Well, it's a thing, apparently. So I don't know what it is, but oh my God. And then I feel, again, guilty because I always feel guilty about it, almost everything I do. I felt terrible that this podcast got kicked down the line because there was games to talk about. And now I won't say those games are irrelevant.
No, meaningless. I don't even know what the point is of this one anymore.
But we'll have to talk about them in a different fashion to, a more of an immediate reaction to the games. But I guess Tuesday wouldn't have been an immediate reaction anyway. A friend of mine said wanted to go to see the Charlatans tomorrow night. I think tomorrow night, tomorrow I'll be feeling better, but I still don't think I'll be up to it. So I have to cancel on that plan. Just generally feeling like I've let people down, and it's I hate it. Bedridden, awful. Yesterday I just slept in and out of sleep, and drinking Pedialyte and awful. I apologize to everyone for this. I apologize for starting the podcast like this. I will say one thing there was something that cheered me up this morning, Andrew. A listener sent us Adidas, or as you guys say, Adidas, have done a little advert for the Predator football boot with the soup du jour that is Jude Bellingham. And this is what it sounds like, and it's pretty cool.
Surely everyone being able to score is a good thing.
It's a shame, but the world just isn't ready.
The only problem I have with this advert, Andrew, is that it suggests very strongly that the reason Bellingham is doing all this goal scoring is because this boot is so state of the art. It allows everybody to score.
But that's what the entire sports sneaker industry is based around. If you put on these Air Jordans, you're gonna jump 4 feet in the air. Like this is 30 years of marketing
but,
that way.
But the scientist goes, the world is not ready for these. And Jude says, shouldn't everybody be allowed to score? You know, it's almost plaintively. And now he is doing all this goal scoring, and it's because of the boots. But anyway, boots look amazing, by the way.
The whole Jordan, it's got to be the shoes, right? Wasn't that an ad campaign in the 90s? Like, this is almost a throwback to that kind of marketing.
The original Adidas Predator advert was a poster that said, goalkeepers, retire. That is because everyone was going to be scoring mad goals because of this. So anyway, that was pretty cool.
I think it's how we should market our shirts. If you wear this, you'll be able to speak eloquently for an hour and 20 minutes consecutively.
I think eloquently is pretty strong for us. Speak. You'll be able to say words in a row.
Yes. The store. We should remind everyone the store is open. It's running. If you recently ordered a shirt and you're wondering why it's delayed, it's because JJ was violently ill.
Or if you ordered
one recently and it smells like vomit, well, that's also why.
Yeah, listen, I, as time goes on, I really resent you having any involvement in my work, in what I do here with this thing. Because all you do is S on it. All you do is S on it. Yeah. Guys, the first round of orders came in. Those shirts are now being made. And I will be shipping to you hopefully next week. So that's how it works.
Because he's sick.
No, because they have to be made, Andrew. We don't have a massive warehouse where we store all our t-shirts and I just go and pick them and send them. You see, this is how little you know about what's being done.
So they won't smell like vomit.
I'm going to try and get an addendum made to our LLC where I get the 90% of the profits for these t-shirts and you get zero.
Careful.
Careful.
You be careful now. This could all go away in an instant.
Yeah. Speaking of going away in an instant, while we're riffing here, Mourinho gone at Roma. And now the clamber amongst, from what I've seen, Republic of Ireland fans and US fans to have him installed as their manager begins.
I do wonder if that is his next move. Because we have said, and it should be noted too, he was really emotional about this exit. I saw a video of him in his car where it looked like he had clearly been crying. Like his eyes were red and puffy as fans were kind of giving him like a kind send off. They love him though.
You know, he's going because fundamentally they didn't really advance in the league. That's fundamentally why he's gone.
Right.
But it didn't mean there wasn't a lot of love engendered for him. Charisma and personality gets you an awful long way. And the fans loved him. And the Europa Conference League trophy clearly meant a lot to them, even though it for a club of Roma stature, it's obviously the lowest on the totem pole. Europa League finalists as well. You see, he's a good cup manager. He
has to go to the international game. I really think managing a national team is the right progression for him. Not just because of what you're saying, that he's a good cup manager and that's exclusively what you're managing, are a variety of cup tournaments. But like, how many times have we said this over the last several years on this show about national teams and about international soccer right now? His style, while it's perhaps going out, you know, a little bit obsolete in club football, like if you look at successful national teams, it's kind of how they play. Like the free-flowing, really fun-to-watch teams are not necessarily the teams that are winning a lot of trophies. We've said even France, who can do both, but we've even had that gripe about them at times, that they could be more open and more fun to watch than what they are. England, it's always the gripe with them, and yet they've never been more successful, except in the 60s. Like, his style is probably most well-designed for that type of soccer right now.
You might be right. This is Nicky Bandini in The Guardian. To say the Roma fans loved him would be an understatement. Mourinho has been the key factor in Roma selling out more than 40 home games over the past 2.5 seasons, including a 36-game consecutive run. Yeah. I mean, I think I got most annoyed with him at his time at like United and Tottenham, when it just seemed to be, you know, the same old shtick, kind of the injection of poison into a club to kind of create something, and it didn't work. And like those teams, they were hard to watch, very hard to watch. But like as a person or a character, I'd love to see him get into the TV game, back into the TV game, because he's done little bits. Whenever he's had a hiatus from a job, he's done little bits, and he's very, very good at it.
He would be excellent. If he was regularly a pundit, I think he'd be really good, because he's very smart. And like you said, he is charismatic. And for whatever, like you use the term poison, which I can understand, but there is this likable quality to him.
But he seems to thrive though in a kind of an atmosphere of, what would you say? Dissent's not the right word, but a kind of an explosive atmosphere, tension. He likes tension.
Yeah.
And that's not conducive to a 42 or 38 game season, you know? Maybe tournament football is exactly, maybe you don't even want him for qualifiers. Maybe you just want him bang in for the tournament. Zito Madu tweeted that he'd have Pulisic in tears after 2 weeks.
I don't know.
Yeah, and now Daniele De Rossi goes in as the interim coach, which is, I always think that's a terrible thing to do to like, talk about beloved. A beloved ex-Roma player is now going to step in and manage.
Well, maybe that was part of the calculation to this, is that they're getting rid of a manager that, even with their struggles in the league, a lot of fans still have the back of. And so they had to win a press conference in some way. And they weren't going to do it by bringing in some journeyman. It had to be someone that is beloved within that club to keep the fans on their side. So I'm not stunned.
There's going to be work for him. He's been in our lives now for almost, what would you say? It's 20 years, really.
Mourinho, you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to that Champions League run with Porto.
With Porto. Or even go back to the Europa League, the UEFA Cup against Celtic in 2003. Yeah, he's kind of just been there. So I don't really see him going anywhere. And finally, while we riff, Hendo confirmed Ajax.
Well, they're negotiating. Is it actually confirmed that he's going there? I thought that I thought representatives from the club were negotiating to make the deal official.
I think the deal is happening.
He had agreed.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I think it's pretty much, there'll be no transfer fee is what I'm seeing. I'm pretty sure it's Henderson set to leave Saudi close to Ajax transfer 10 minutes ago from The Athletic. So it's close. It's close.
Well, his next interview will be an interesting one. I know his last one did not go well for him, but I think a lot of people will want to hear, okay, while you kind of, I mean, this might be a little harsh, but it felt like there was a little bit of a selling of the soul here for a financial gain. And I think a lot of people will hear, was it worth it? Why'd you leave? What was it like there? I mean, like, he might be a cautionary tale for a lot of English players that are thinking about taking that money. And watching the reputational hit that he had, and clear, I mean, look, he wouldn't be leaving after what, 4 months if he obviously did not enjoy it. So I think a lot of people will want to hear now his conclusions from his time there. what he made.
I mean, it's not going too well for Karim Benzema either. What was it? He was supposed to be back for winter training or something, and then he was like, "Oh, I can't. I'm still stuck in Mauritius. Oh, I can't make it back."
Yeah.
All this money seems fine until you go to a place where having that kind of money is not detrimental, but it's like, so what? Oh, you have millions of dollars. Where do you live? Saudi Arabia. Okay. Karim Benzema is still stranded in Mauritius, waiting to catch a flight to Dubai, where Club Al Ittihad are waiting for him to begin preseason training.
Yeah.
These guys are going to go there and they're going to try and push it as hard as they can to see what they can get away with. But I think this league is falling apart already, to be perfectly honest with you.
Well, let's continue now while we're talking about Saudi Arabia. I mean, look, there's a couple games from over the weekend, JJ. They were very interesting. I don't know what to do with them now on a Wednesday. I have this rundown.
Let's just talk about the things we saw on them. Don't go by your rundown. Let's be free, man. Let's do free form. This is interpretive dance now.
I must do rigid and structured. It's the only way I know. City and Newcastle over the weekend. It was actually a great game. I really enjoyed watching it. The nature of City going up and then Newcastle storming back the way that they did. One weird thing with Manchester City, and I know they won this game and they're feeling good right now. They've got De Bruyne back, who we'll talk about. But like, there's a weird vulnerability to them.
Definitely.
Where they don't concede many chances, but the ones that they do, they're scored on. Like, this is from The Athletic. Against Newcastle, it was the 11th time in all competitions that Guardiola's team had been stung by their opponent's first attack of the game this season, and the third time that they've conceded both of their first two. It's a trend that became all the more harmful at a raucous St. James Park. They conceded both of their efforts on target in a 2-2 draw to Crystal Palace, 3 out of 4 against Tottenham, while contriving to lose 2-1 against Wolves at Molineux, despite their opponents hitting the target once, since Ruben Diaz also scored an own goal. For a team that asserts so much control, they are disproportionately fragile on the break. This is weird. And it lends even more importance to their style of needing to maintain as much possession as possible, because when they give it up, they get scored upon, it feels like.
Pep Guardiola's whole thing is don't kick the ball forward quickly, because it'll go back even quicker and then you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, so keep it, kind of suffocate, move the ball around. And when that doesn't happen, they're in trouble. Now, it was interesting to see during that game in the first half, how many times Kyle Walker was sprinting back towards his own goal with like acres of grass between him and the goalkeeper. Isak took his goal superbly well, as did Gordon, let's be honest.
I thought of you after Gordon's, because the face he made when he came over to the camera after what you said on the last pod about him. I just thought that it was a face that you probably would have been disgusted by. He had a real smug, like,
the smug rat.
Yeah, it was just a face that screamed of like, "Oh, look what I just did." Like,
yeah,
it was that,
I know.
Kind of,
I honestly, I don't mind that, because he scored a beautiful goal.
It was.
I don't mind that. It was what he did against Sunderland, like to belittle the Sunderland player. No, I'll give you the shirt afterwards. Yeah, I'll give you the shirt afterwards. You can have it. Like, I'm something. Oh, look at me. Ugh. I didn't like the defending by Kyle Walker, and I don't fancy this goalkeeper, City's number two, who we've never really gotten accustomed to. I was calling him, in my head, I was calling him Garcia for the whole, like, I know nothing about this guy, but his name is Stefan Ortega, and I feel like I should know something a bit more about him. But I like what he did appear to be a courtesy dive for the Gordon goal. It was like, do people do this when they're older? Maybe they do. You know, when you're trying to explain something to someone or what, something that happened, and you get up out of your seat and you do the actions of what happened. You know, you wouldn't believe what happened. He just came in from the side like this, and you're already on your feet doing that thing. That is what Kyle Walker and Ortega were doing. Kyle Walker was explaining how he would defend something. and Ortega was showing how he would dive to try and save something. Neither of it was convincing. It was very, very, like, I'd be worried now with this guy. Very, very worried.
We'll see. I mean, he got thrust in unexpectedly. You know, Newcastle are good. Those finishes were also very good. We'll see. I'm not ready to.
Yeah, I didn't love Walker defending those goals. Well, I did love though, and I should say.
Well, real quick though, before you move off it, this idea though of City conceding goals every time they give up an attack. By the way, it was actually even worse in this game because really the first attack in the third minute,
yeah.
Longstaff scored, but he was ruled offside. So even the one that didn't count, they did get a goal on. So I don't know. I don't know if this is something City is just going to kind of have to figure out, or if they're just going to cope with this and say, well, we'll just keep continuing to maintain as much possession as possible. And I think that this won't be an issue. We can give up a goal a game and still win. I don't know, but it's just a weird anomaly for a team that we think so highly of. They can be gotten to.
No, but consistently are gotten to. Yeah. By the way, is there a better phrase? That comes straight out of mafia lore. They can be got at. And they do feel vulnerable in that way. But on the other side of things, there was that sense of City being vulnerable in this game. And there was also that sense of, uh-oh, look who's back. I mean, let me talk about Bernardo Silva. Like, Bernardo Silva, nobody who really watches football underrates him. But I still think I want to call him underrated because that's what people do with players they really like. They just say, oh, he's underrated.
I think he is underrated. I actually agree with that idea that he is.
Who is underrating him? I mean, they shouldn't be.
But any if we made our list of the top 10 players in the world right now, and I'm just trying to think now off the top of my head. Like, I don't know, would people automatically include him? But I think that he'd have, considering how vital he was to their treble last year, I think did he play more games than anyone on the team? Something like that. And then what he's doing this year, I think you can make a real case that he's a top 10 player in the world. But I don't know how many people right away thinking of him. Because it's hard on City to break through. Like, we've seen so many, like, especially a guy like Bernardo Silva, who for the first few years that he was there, it was hard to tell. Is he like a regular first team player? Is he a rotational player? So for some people, it might just be a first impression of him. Like, I wonder if Julian Alvarez will have a hard time breaking that barrier in people's minds. Right now, he's one of the best players in the world. But his first impression at City was like, well, he hardly ever plays. So it might take a while for some of these guys to like rewrite the narrative on them.
And also, I do think playing for Manchester City can often stifle how you're regarded just because, well, they're expected to win. Oh, well, they win every year. Oh, you know, it's harder to see that. But Silva's finish on the goal was, I don't know, that is still one of the best, the most enjoyable finishes you can see. Now, I still think Dubravka, through no fault of his own, he could be expecting a flick at the near post. Absolutely. He's got to get that little bit farther over. So he leaves that bit for Silva, that almost inviting angle for Silva to do that, but to execute and to get it so perfect, it was so deft, was brilliant. But yeah, let's look at the, people loved our comparison of De Bruyne to a lawyer who's running off to court after just doing, playing squash in the morning or whatever. that hair really gives him that vibe. What a brilliant goal that was, Andrew. What an absolutely brilliant goal. Everything about that was so bloody good.
Might have only been the second best thing that he did on the day. I mean, look, I know that goal was huge. It tied the game.
You're talking the pass to Oscar Bob.
What an unbelievable way to win a game. Like, and by the way, I give Bob credit. It's a weird thing just calling him Bob. Like, it's a hard thing to get used to.
Bob's your next door neighbor.
Yeah. Oscar Robert. I can't call him Bob.
No, it sounds like, for the police, Oscar Bob Tango Zulu.
But I give him credit too. His run was great. And his finish, I mean, his footwork around the keeper, around Dubravka to be able to finish that was amazing as well. But De Bruyne, like, to pick that out as perfectly as he did, to see the run, but like, it was not an easy pass that he made to lob that in over the top like that as perfectly as it was. I was reading something about De Bruyne coming back from this injury, and he talked about the importance for him of like having been away from the game, and like he knew he wasn't coming back right away, so he just sort of like he just left
the game for a little bit and allowed his mind to sort of just like relax itself from football. And he talked about like feeling like truly refreshed as he's felt in years playing the sport. And I wonder, you know, I was going to mention something later, but I can bring it up now about like Kylian Mbappe talked this week to British GQ magazine about how he sees soccer going the way that the NBA has gone of load management and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I wonder like De Bruyne talking that way, and then you can see it. I mean, he's always great, but you can see since he's come back in these first couple appearances, it's just like the way he's hit the ground running is extraordinary. And there hasn't been any like slow build other than the fact that he hasn't started these games. But in terms of his performances, this is like prime De Bruyne. And I wonder if other guys are going to see this and think like, I could use that kind of sabbatical from this sport physically and mentally too.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Load management is key now. The game is so much faster. The stresses on players are huge.
I worry a lot if that, I mean, that mentality, look, teams are playing like 60 plus games now.
Yeah.
And those are the elite teams, and the elite teams are comprised of guys who are then all going off to their national teams and playing more games. So look, I'm a huge NBA fan, and I can tell you in my lifetime as a basketball fan, nothing has hurt the sport more than load management. For me as a viewer, I used to turn on TNT and whatever the game was, I'd just watch it because I love basketball, and I don't do that now. And it's because like, I just don't like subliminally almost, I just don't trust who I'm going to see playing in that game, that it's going to be like a true representation of those teams. And soccer already deals with that to a certain extent. I mean, I know that as somebody who plays fantasy soccer, that like you wake up in the morning and sometimes it's like, well, why is he not playing? What the heck? If that becomes even more and permeates the sport even more than it already has. And, you know, I do worry about that. People want to see these players, and they can't give it their all and have to take games off for no reason. That's dangerous.
But yeah, but we just talked about the stats, Andrew. First of all, to compare basketball, and I'm not saying basketball isn't a physical sport. It very much is a physical sport, but there are games, and basketball is one of those, where you can have breaks within a game. Like, it's not as continuous as soccer, and we talked about the stats, we're seeing massive rise in hamstring injuries.
I agree. I'm saying all the more reason that soccer should be worried about this.
Yeah. So I don't think we really, like, what De Bruyne did with that goal to pass it into the bottom corner, I know the pass to Oscar Bob was good, but When De Bruyne gets turned and attacks that pocket of space, you can just see in his eyes, he knows exactly what he wants to do. Now, to nutmeg the defender and then put it into the bottom corner and it wasn't a strike. Well, it was obviously a strike, but he passed it. It's so good, man. It's so good. He's the best player that's ever played for Manchester City.
I would agree with that.
You can keep your companies. You can keep your Agüeros. Keep them all. He's the best player.
I mean, look, we'll see.
Best all-round footballer that's ever played for them.
I would agree with that. We'll see where Haaland ends up, where this is headed. And by the way, the fact that he's not back yet, I mean, there's still room for this team to get better this year. But yeah, right now, as it stands, De Bruyne. I would agree with that. Not much on the Newcastle side. I saw Joe Linton. I don't know if it's official yet, but there's a chance now he could be done for the season with a groin injury. That's not good.
No.
Obviously a big worry for a team that's dealt with injuries all the season. I will say, look, they've been terrible lately. In this game, I actually thought that they did have some nice moves, some nice passages of play. They, like we said, they scored a couple goals, almost had a third with Longstaff in the beginning, almost had another one right after. I mean, there was a 5-minute stretch where they got those two goals and then nearly came right back on the break again. And your man Ortega made a big save to keep it at just two for Newcastle, but they almost had three goals in 5 minutes. And then in the second half, it was a bit of a different game. They defended and City pressed on and eventually got their two, but yeah, is it enough to look at Newcastle and say, okay, maybe they're on their way back? I don't know. They lost, so it's hard to take too many positives from it, at home, no less. But there were some moments in that game where you thought, okay, maybe they're out of the Champions League. Maybe they can refocus a little bit on this and sort of weather the storm the rest of the year, as opposed to the free fall that they kind of appeared to be in during December. We'll see. Any more on this game?
I, No, yeah, I hate Newcastle did do well in this game, but again, it's one of those where I'm not sure what happens now, especially with the potential entry to Joe Linton. They're not going to do any activity in this transfer window, or we feel like they're not. So I kind of feel like they'll. Yeah, it's they're in a weird spot right now.
Yeah.
They're in a very strange spot, and it's something we should talk about down the line. Like, what happens now? It's probably Jamie Carragher said something that kind of interested me about Newcastle, about how he doesn't think they're going to go on and dominate now, and I wonder if there's so many things happening now in terms of financial checks, of kind of oversight, that it was a bad time for the Saudis to buy a football club in England.
I was going to bring that up later when we do talk about Everton and Forest. I was going to bring this up specifically, but if you're talking about it now, I'll say it now. I agree with that idea. I would agree with Jamie Carragher that, you know, I don't know, maybe there might be an opportunity for them to sort of have a one-off here and there, but seeing how serious now these financial restrictions are, and I think how seriously teams, Newcastle included, because they've talked about this, having to stay within those guardrails, I think they might have missed their window. Like, they could have been Manchester City if they had done this 10 years earlier, but I don't think that can happen now. They could be good. They could qualify for Champions League again. They could still get good players, but like, this idea of buying their way up into being the best club in England and in Europe, if people thought that that was going to be the case, I think we're seeing now that I don't know that that can happen.
Maybe no, I'm not. Yeah, I don't think so either.
But yeah, we'll talk about Everton and Forest a little bit later. One other game in the Premier League from a few days ago we wanted to mention, Tottenham. They go to Old Trafford. They leave with a point. Again, good game. This one on the Manchester United side, I don't know, in some ways it kind of felt very like representative of the season they've had. Like, they did some things right, but it's never quite enough to overcome the things that they do wrong. Like, the good, like, they started this game, they started well. What a great finish from Rasmus Højlund on that goal. I mean, it looked, you know, Tottenham were scattered all over the place, but then they did kind of, to their credit, like Destiny Udogie, who's up in an attack position, he does sprint all the way back and he does kind of recover and get back into position. And so it's then left on Højlund. They're only scoring that goal there if the finish is incredible. And it was. It's a great finish from him. And they spread Tottenham out. You know, Marcus Rashford, like I talked about with him, the more I watch him, the more I sort of think, as he goes, this team will go. Again, he had moments where he played well. His finish was excellent for United's second. That's, you know, reason to feel good, maybe, if he's starting to round back into form. But then, they undo all of their good with enough bad things that they can't overcome it. JJ, their set piece defending was so awful. Off corner kicks. I mean, Spurs scored on one, hit the bar on another, had another one that was cleared off the line. These are just corners. You know, so you have that. And then to start the second half, you come out of the locker room asleep like that? No one tracks Bentancur's run into the box. I guess looking back on it, Eriksen kind of does, but then he stops completely, which either leads me to believe that he's just, I don't know, didn't care, or if he thought he was passing him off to someone else that just didn't continue to track the run for him. I don't know, but you can't allow someone to just run into the box by themselves. Timo Werner slips them the ball. Easy goal. And then even at the end, they had a chance to win it. I don't want to criticize McTominay too much because he saved them on several occasions this season, but my God, you have a free header. Tottenham has left him alone. There's no one around him, no one within 6 yards of him, and he's only 6 yards from goal. Puts it over the bar. I mean, you know, United will look back on this one. They were not happy after this game. I think in all ties, there's a winner and a loser. They felt like the loser, and they probably should. A lot of their problems felt a little bit self-inflicted.
Yeah, I think, like, watching the game, you could see how Tottenham are absolutely set up to be one of the few teams that United can get at. You saw them going at Pedro Porro, like, for most of that first half, they're kind of trying to overload down that side. They looked dangerous on the break. The big conversation on Sky afterwards, in the Sky studio, was just how Spurs should have won the game, how Spurs were the better team. And the concern from Gary Neville was, we still don't see patterns of play and patterns of movement with United. Like, if they're not playing a team that gives you space in behind, like, what are they good at? What do they do? Like, that's the problem, Andrew. The manager he's come in, but the manager has been, what we expected from him was what he quickly realized he couldn't deliver, which was Ajax 2019. So he can't do that. So he said he's going to make this the best counter-attacking team in football. But, I mean, unless you're playing a side that are actively going to give you those kind of opportunities, it's not going to really work for you. And
which Tottenham kind of do. And United still didn't.
Of course they
win.
Do. Tottenham will do it for anyone because it's just the way we are, mate. That's how we play. But you're right. You're going to really hamstring yourself if you make those individual errors. The Richarlison equaliser, it's a nice header, but look at where Wan-Bissaka ends up. Like, behind Richarlison with two hands on his back. Like, this weak effort. Like, basic defending. Shove yourself in. Get goal side.
And then when Romero hit the bar, he was left even more alone.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. And the Bentancur goal. Were you watching that thinking, why isn't anyone doing anything?
Yeah, it was weird the way he could run in sort of unopposed.
Just run in, and I don't know who the defender was in front of him, but and then look at your goalkeeper. So, for some reason, decides to go low. And, I mean, it's a great finish, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I don't put that as much on Onana. That's tough.
He drops a knee there. I don't know what he's doing. So Big Jim, Sir Big Jim Ratcliffe is in there and installed now with operating the quarter of Manchester United that is solely involved with football operations. And, like, apparently they're going to have meetings all this week. There's going to be changes. I'm fascinated to see what he comes up with. Or what his group comes up with, or what changes are made. But we got some criticism on Twitter for, I mean, not much actually, but a little bit for saying that when we went through the Manchester United, when of the last time Manchester United made a good signing, and we suggested that Lisandro Martinez hasn't been a good signing. And he came back.
Did we suggest he wasn't good? We kind of said...
We said he was
he's
injured.
He's been hurt. Yeah. I don't know. Like, so he, I didn't he, say that he... We didn't say he wasn't good.
But he's missed so many games. If you look at... he's been out for 105 days for this season. It's been... I mean, there's no point. A signing can't be good if he doesn't play. Now, I will revise that if he comes back in and proves himself to be...
Sure.
Yeah, you know, and like he can be good when he does play. We know that, but that's just to clarify that point. But you look at the rest of the team, even the goals, Andrew. Though to go back to Gary Neville's point about like passing and moves, you know, like it's a great finish from Hoyland, but it's an accident. Like Rashford's got the ball and he's looking to create an angle. He nearly runs into Hoyland, and it's a doggy that tees up Hoyland.
Yeah,
you know, so much of what United do is kind of relies on individual brilliance and off the cuff. And now Roy Keane's argument was, well, you can say all you want about how well Spurs played, didn't win the game. It still finished 2-2. And he says, you got to focus that United in their current state, that's a good point. And I accept all that, but I just don't, I don't see Ten Hag being manager.
I don't know if I fully agree with Keane on that. I mean, boy, that's speaking pretty highly of Tottenham, that a Tottenham side on the road without Son, without Madison. I mean, they're two best attackers, you know, missing multiple members of their midfield. I know they had Van de Ven and Romero back, but those guys, that's literally their first game back from injury. I don't know if they're 100% yet. If that's where we're at with United, and we've talked about a lowering the bar with them, but a Tottenham side kind of in transition, missing some of their best players on the road. And that's Roy Keane's comment for United. Like that is yet another sign of the bar being lowered.
Oh,
that they shouldn't be expected to win that game at home.
Yeah, definitely. It's taken me forever to recalibrate expectations for Manchester United. So I'm sure a former club captain, sure, it's going to take that bit longer. But I actually enjoyed the game mostly.
Yeah. Any initial impressions of Timo Werner's return?
I think he's so good on the ball. Oh, he shot wide.
Yeah, that's and look, he had an assist. Give him credit. You know,
he's got lots of good attributes.
Yeah,
but going to run the channels for you. He's going to get on the ball. And then he's going to, like, his first effort where Werner cuts inside and I'm like, top corner, go on, please, top corner. Shh, shankopotamus.
Almost hit it out of the stadium. Yeah, he definitely did some things that were good. He definitely did some things that reminded you of his last time with Chelsea. Like, it was, you know, it was kind of a Timo Werner performance, which was fine. He was fine. Would have been cool if he could have scored on that one. The pass, Oliver Skip had a great game. And the pass that he made to set Werner up would have been an awesome goal for Werner to have finished off, but he put it way wide.
Oh, Skip's pass was...
Love those.
So bloody good. Yeah. What did you call it? A volleyed pass?
Kind of singed it. Like, I don't know if that... Is that an onomatopoeia? Like, it's...
Singed. Yeah, that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Does it feel like that, or am I just agreeing with you?
I don't know. You know, that's never... It's not usually your modus operandi.
He singed it. Onomatopoeia. Yeah. I guess, yeah, because it's like he's cracking a match. It's not full contact on the ball. It's like creating a spin. It looked beautiful.
Yeah, would have been a cool goal to finish. But one other personal note, on the tribal nature of sports and this sport in particular, my buddy Berenson, who you talk with from time to time, who's a diehard Manchester United fan, he texted me during the game, and he's like, Garnacho, absolutely a penalty, has to be called. Look, he's United, I'm Tottenham, so yeah, sure. This is how it goes. But like, really, is that what we want? We want stuff like that to be given. Yes, does he have hands around Garnacho? Sure, but should that cause a human being to instantly have their legs come out from under them and drop to the ground? Like, can we be real here? Is that what we want this sport to devolve into? Come on, give me a break. Yeah. And I saw Dale Johnson. So I wrote back to him. I said, oh, please. I don't know if he thought I'd agree or say, yeah, we got away with one. But I went right back and just said, save it for United, your United buddies. All right. I don't need that. That's ridiculous. You really think that's a foul? Come on. And Dale Johnson on ESPN FC, he said, no, that's never a penalty. And
But And Dan's a good lad, in fairness to him, though. We should state that vociferously, that he is a good lad. But he is, I mean, he's under investigation for clutching all the straws that are to be clutched. He's hoarding the straws now. So our friend Danny Higginbotham tweeted out something that I just was on the money and exactly how I was thinking. United with a good first half against the Spurs team that always create chances. Games like this tend to suit United when they can play on the counter. Struggle is when teams sit back. And then I responded 100%. I said, it's a game that's hard to read progress from if you support United. And Dan responds, felt like a game we should have won. Spurs play exactly the kind of high-line football that we go to town on. Missed opportunity. Now, I could leave that alone. Well, and I should leave that alone, but I didn't. Said Tottenham the better side in the second half, but United could still have won. Fair enough. United don't go to town on anybody these days. Best they can hope for is to visit a village. That's cheap.
You can't help yourself.
No, it's cheap.
But I will say this on the Spurs side of that. This is... So right now, like, again, it's seen as a good point for Spurs and people are accepting of that. But these are the moments down the road a little bit that will get Ange into trouble. When you, like, I know he has his system and it's how they're going to play come hell or high water. And that's cool as long as it's working. But like, when you go into a game like this, where your system is exactly the system your opposition wants you to be playing and you're not going to bend on it. If you lose those games, then I think it's fair to ask questions. You can't show any flexibility. Like right now, I think we're all still in a moment where we accept it and you want this team to learn how to play this style because that's going to be their primary go-to format of how they're going to play. But like, are we going to still be accepting that next year or in 2 years? Like at some point, I do think like flexibility against the team that wants you to do that, desperately wants you to do that because that's the only way that they can score goals is against a system like that. We'll see. If Tottenham are so good at it that teams are powerless against it, then fine. But if they start pouring in 2, 3, 4, then we'll see.
It's like Tottenham have to overwhelm a side. It's like early stage Klopp. Remember when under Klopp they'd score like five against Roma or whoever, and Roma
gets like Dortmund in the Europa League.
Yeah, like you have to score so many goals because you're going to be leaky at the back, and I don't know how sustainable that is. Oh, by the way, how happy were you to see Mickey van de Ven back?
Oh, I mean it's enormously important. And ahead of schedule. Now Madison is the next big one because their attack has looked different without him.
How does an attack?
His vision. I don't think I ever understood how great Madison's vision was of what he can pick out.
How is it put together with Timo Werner in the side now?
Well, Werner, I think so it moves Brendan Johnson to the other side. I think Werner is probably I wonder now if they have more pieces than they have spots, especially when Son comes back. I think Werner will probably revert to some sort of rotational role off the bench.
I think it'll be Brennan and Werner that'll be rotating time.
Tough to take Richarlison. How do you take him out right now? 6 goals in his last 6 games, I think it is. Mm. I mean, he's been really good. This is what honestly, if this isn't good enough, then what were people hoping? Like, this is what you hope to be getting when you spent $60 million on him. And he's doing that now. It took longer than expected, but he's doing it. So I don't know how you take him out. I think Son on the left, Richarlison in the middle, and Kulusevski on the right. And then I don't know like how you work in Brennan Johnson and Timo Werner. Guys are going to keep getting hurt. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, we'll see. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I like what Timo Werner brings, but I don't know how many goals that's going to be. He might just create, set up other guy. I don't know. He's a total wild card.
I'm rooting for him.
Yeah,
I want him to absolutely just blaze for the rest of the season, score 10 goals, 12 goals, and then have tweets go out that, real talk here, if Werner had joined earlier, he'd be in the conversation for Football Writers Player of the Year. That's what I want.
Oh, jeez. All right. Well, I mean, Chelsea rejects at Spurs has not traditionally gone great, at least not in recent times, especially with the managerial appointments. But maybe it'll be different with the on-field players. One other game from a few days ago, JJ, the Spanish Super Cup in Saudi Arabia, Real Madrid, they dominate. I mean, they really dominated Barcelona in this final. It was the Vinicius show. He was unbelievable in this game. A first half hat trick, just the best version of him. And Real Madrid looked, I mean, they looked really dangerous all throughout. Felt like the kind of game, you know, I know it's their season so far has been a little bit uneven, you know, not able to pull away from Girona. And I wonder now if this is sort of like a look out, here we come kind of moment where maybe they'll start to, cause yeah, they just, boy, did they look good. On every level. But the side of this that I was interested in was the Barcelona side. So look, this is one of those competitions where I don't know what this means. Real Madrid winning this, Barcelona losing it. I guess it's the kind of thing to equate it to something personally, like what we always talk about with the US and Mexico when they meet in the CONCACAF Nations League. Like, this is a competition that has just been created. I don't know how important it is, but for whatever reason, those two teams have decided that to them, especially when they play each other, it's everything. And I wonder if there's a little bit of that. Real Madrid and Barcelona, this isn't a friendly. It's almost like to some people, they might see it at that, but they decided that it's not. And that was never more evident than afterwards, where, again, like, I don't know which way I expected Xavi to go with this, but he seemed crestfallen over it. And he was, I mean, he must have apologized like 5 different times to the fans when he spoke afterwards. I mean, this seemed like it was really, really just weird. Like, it's a game in Saudi Arabia. You know, it kind of felt like a friendly in some ways. Now, I watched these games. I watched Real Madrid's first game and then this game. They didn't necessarily play like friendly. I mean, these teams went for it. It meant a lot to them. But just the atmosphere around it, this midseason tournament, it just felt weird. But like, they decided that this was hugely important. At least that's how it felt. And Xavi's comments afterwards were a little bit worrying. And then there was some talk in the time afterwards about players maybe starting to lose faith in him. And, you know, I think there's been some reassurances since then. And Xavi spoke and he came right out and said, if the players lose faith in me, then I will leave. if that happens. And he was very honest, too. He said, if I hadn't won La Liga last year, I wouldn't be here now. Wow. I think he knows that there's a lot of pressure on him. And it's tough. I do feel a little bit bad for him because he came into – I wonder if he's becoming a little bit of a victim of his quick success, because he came into Barcelona when they were in a very difficult period. Now, they have gone out and backed him, and they've made some signings. But we've talked about the weirdness of a lot of those signings, that it's a little bit of like almost a Chelsea feel of like a lot of random guys being brought in, guys that you wouldn't always necessarily expect to play for Barcelona. And he won the league. And so the expectations then jump. And now it's like, okay, well, now we got to, you know, we got to keep doing this, and we got to do it in Europe. And it quickly, like, you know how Barcelona fans are. They expect to win everything, always. And oftentimes they're proven right. And they're not there yet. They're still kind of working their way back to being that kind of Barcelona.
And they probably will never be. The financial hole they've dug themselves into. Again, we were talking about recalibrated expectations for United. Barcelona will probably never be that again, Andrew.
It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard.
There's never going to be it. No. It's unlikely there'll ever be a Pep era again.
I mean, I look for a club like Barcelona, Madrid. Like, there are certain clubs where I don't know that I, to quote MacGruber, never say never. But I don't. You're right. Like, I see why you'd be skeptical of them being able to find some of those heights again. But it is Barcelona. But this is the danger, and we've seen it with like Lampard at Chelsea, guys like that. Like, when you hire a legend to be manager, there can be weirdness when things go wrong. And it's for a guy who's one of the greatest Barcelona players ever, one of the winningest players ever. Before he was manager of this club, I remember watching like the Barcelona documentary, and like they're going through all of his teammates, and they're all like, oh, Xavi's going to manage this club. Like, we all know where this is headed. This guy's born to manage this club. So when things don't go well, and I guess that's how it's viewed right now with how they're playing and losing this to Real Madrid in something that apparently they really wanted to win. There's some weirdness there, and it's already kind of fraying for Xavi, and you can see that on his face. And a quick exit in the Champions League, it could get a little bit more nerve wracking for this guy who's such a legend in that club. So
you're right.
We'll see.
It could get real very quickly for him.
But Barcelona, though, I mean, they got 9 goals across these two games against Atletico Madrid and Barcelona for Real Madrid. I felt a little bit like a second half of the season statement.
Well, that's why they're your favorite team.
Well, I didn't to watch. No. I just enjoy. And by the way, I think 9 goals in 2 games against those teams. I think I'm right. I think I'm right on this. More should join me. I don't think enough people are watching Real Madrid. This little club in the Spanish capital. I'll tell you what. Let's go ahead. We'll take a break, JJ. We'll come back on the other side. Some more riffing. I got some random things here. And then, of course, we do have to talk about what's happened in the last couple of days with Everton and Nottingham Forest. I think a lot of people are confused. I think even I am. Can help educate me, JJ, so I can help educate the people. More Caught Offside still to come.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside. JJ, before we dive back in, allow me to bring up a thing that you have no time or use for. The FIFA Best Awards were the other day. So
what is this now?
So here's what I want to say about this. I'm gonna
join. Thierry Henry said something nasty to Rejman Chaudhry. Is that right? Or something?
I know he made fun of Tottenham, right?
Yeah, he did. I think
she handed him a trophy.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, you're a Tottenham fan, so you shouldn't be holding that anyway, or something like that. I don't know. Whatever.
Why in that moment do that, though?
Whatever.
It's so, like, it's even cheaper than me in my comment to Dan. It's, ugh, puerile.
Yeah. But what I was going to say is that I'm prepared to, I mean, you know me. You know I do have time for some of these awards, and I do find them interesting. And it's for me, it's fun, like the debate on who's the best, and that I enjoy that side of it. But this one, I'm going to join you hand in hand, and we're going to dance together in not caring about this. And here's why. Now, look, Aitana Bonmati, she won for the women, which was expected and deserved, and I have no issue with that. But Lionel Messi, player who I love, won for the men. This is an award for the year 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Argentina beat France in the World Cup on December 18th, 2022.
Yeah.
In 2023, Messi won Ligue 1 by a single point over Lens. After they went on the Champions League, I didn't think I'd have to say their name again. Lens, Lens.
Curse you, Lens.
And then Messi, PSG, they lost in the round of 16 of the Champions League. And then he came to MLS and won the League's Cup. And this is not to say that Messi wasn't very good in these competitions. He was.
But they're nothing competitions.
But this all happened in the same year that Erling Haaland won a treble and broke records in what is widely considered to be the best league in the world. And so I thought, well, how can this be? I love Messi and like, I'm not upset, but like, this isn't right. Like this doesn't really make sense. So the voting process, JJ, and I looked into it. So there's four separate votes that each comprise 25% of the overall vote. Journalists, national team coaches, national team captains, and fans. Now, not shockingly, Haaland cleaned up in the vote among national team coaches and journalists. Messi won among national team captains, and he cleaned up among fans. So they were tied for the award, and the tiebreaker is the five-point votes that were cast by national team captains. They are given the tiebreaker, and Messi had more. So here's why I don't care about this award anymore. When I find out that players have a say in an award voting, I raise an eyebrow. When I find out that fans have a say in it, it becomes meaningless. That's it. I'm sorry.
I mean, you do hate the common man.
I'm sorry. Look, and by the way, I'm one of you. You know what I did a couple days ago, JJ? I went and voted for the NBA All-Star game, and I put Tobias Harris right on in there. Start the game, Tobias, because I'm a fan. But I'm why this stuff doesn't matter, because that's ridiculous. So fans, look, it's why, like, when a guy's Hall of Fame credentials are listed, they don't say, oh, and he won four ESPYs. Like, because fans can't be trusted. And so once I find out that fans have a hand in this, then, well, I'm sorry. It's changes the equation for me, and I
tend to agree with you. I was totally thrown when I saw tweets about this. I was like, why? Wow, what's happening now?
How many of those fans do you think watched Messi and Haaland this year that voted? I don't know. I don't know where you go to vote for this. I'm guessing it was like tweeted, and like, you know, it's Messi, so people just vote for him.
Is this the last?
By the way, that applies to national team captains too. They're not watching. They just know it's Messi, and they all worship him.
Is this the last residual muscle memory of the Ronaldo Messi era where we all stopped? I think the past 10 years, 12 years of Messi and Ronaldo winning, hoovering up all these awards,
yeah,
kind of buried the individual award in football. I mean, the PFA award, Football Writers Award, I think in England still means something to me.
Is that the one that Jordan Henderson won? I confused.
All right, well, it means nothing to you anymore. And
it died that day for me.
I agreed with you on that one. I didn't think that was correct. But Ryan
was
Giggs,
journalist, just trying to. They
gave Giggs it as well, and was it 07 or so? And that didn't feel right then either. It was more of like a lifetime achievement award at the time. But I do think they need to do something with these awards, and I would say first of all, jazz them down a bit, like. They're two Golden Globes. They're two Oscars. They're trying to be too smart, too clever, too big. Just, you know, get back to basics a bit with just the presentation of them. And yeah, don't, you can't have, in this era, you cannot have fans involved. You simply can't.
We can't be trusted. We've lost the right to be trusted. So, yeah. So, and I'm okay with it for certain, like voting for an All-Star game, sure. But like this, these awards are used to tout like who's great, who's better than who, but not anymore. You won't hear me. And by the way, I don't think I've ever said like, oh, he's won 4 FIFA best awards. Yeah. Won't hear it from me.
I haven't. No, FIFA best. That's from FIFA Pro, which is the union, right? That they run this FIFA best thing, don't they?
Sure.
And also, it's a terrible name.
Yeah.
Be best.
Ugh. Yeah. But congrats to Messi. So another feather in the cap of MLS. We have the reigning Ballon d'Or and FIFA best winner.
Yeah.
Right here.
They should release those figures, those viewership figures. They should really do that. Let us, I mean, then it will just prove that it is the top in the top 3 league in the world.
There you go. JJ, before we get to Everton and Forest, I did want to mention a quick January transfer note. Not one to be surprised by necessarily, but one that is very important nonetheless. Gio Reyna making it abundantly clear he wants out. And it looks like the wheels are in motion for this to be happening. I mean, look, he's appeared in 12 games. He's played 320 minutes this season. He's got to go. Dortmund are looking for apparently somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 million euros for him. Now he's recently switched representation and he's a George Mendes guy now. I'm reading from ESPN FC. According to sources, the 21-year-old has been offered to multiple clubs already. Marseille, Monaco, and Lyon in France, Real Sociedad, Sevilla, and Villarreal in Spain, as well as Portugal's Benfica. Mendes has also mentioned, not surprised. I want you to guess, JJ, which other club George Mendes has mentioned Reyna possibly going to.
Oh, God.
Come on.
Wolves?
There you go. Imagine that.
How has that happened?
Imagine that. And Nottingham Forest, too. Those are the two.
That's because Forest like nom nom nom, give me everyone.
Yeah, those are the two that Mendes has mentioned in the Premier League. So we'll see. Look, I fully agree with this idea that he has to go. It is easy to forget sometimes because of how long we've been aware of him that he is still only 21. Like, there's still like a whole career ahead for this guy. But this next move is important.
Can you imagine those meetings though? Gio, you know, you're fantastic. You know, you've done so much. A World Cup, you know, you're playing for the US men's national team in very important CONCACAF games. The Bundesliga, being involved with the top. You've done so much. We'd love to have you at our club. We would love it. Is what's your dad doing?
Yeah.
He's not around, is he? He's not going to be doing anything, is he?
Right. Like he's hired like a, should we be waiting to find out with how little Reyna has played this year at Dortmund? Like that Claudio has like a private detective who's been on Edin Terzic digging.
We need to let
those jokes die. Yeah, we have to move on.
I have a bunch of them, but I'm worried about slander.
Well, they're jokes though. The thing that's interesting with Reyna though, I think he's really good. And yet, like, why does he struggle to break through in some of these sides? My quick answer is injuries.
Yeah.
And it's hard for him to maybe show everything that he's got. And, you know, when he does get ahead of steam going, an injury pops up that kind of knocks him back. And then players pass him. I mean, look, Dortmund are loaded. Like, there's a lot of, and now they've just got Jadon Sancho. So, you know, he's got to go. But when I've seen him play for the U.S., I think we're a different team when he's out there. Even for Dortmund at the end of last year, remember the last game of the season, JJ. If nothing else, he had 2 assists in it. You thought, okay, well maybe you know this will give him confidence. He can he can do this. That was a huge moment, but he can't get a consistent run of form. And I'm just wondering what is the type of club for him to go to. I saw in the report. I don't know, was it Julian Loren? There's a lot. There's particular interest from La Liga where they think his style is well suited for that league.
Yeah. I mean, is his style being American and we're seeing an American doing well? Like, there could be a bit of 2+2 there. He has to stay fit. I think he can play in any league. I think he's good enough. I wonder what there'd be thoughts about his athleticism and his pace in the Premier League. You know, is he strong enough? Is he quick enough? Maybe those are factors too.
Sure.
But technically, Like, you can't have any doubts about him technically. He is good enough. And I'm hoping whatever landing spot he gets is somewhere where he can play consistently, but not too consistently, because I think he's one of your classic characters for load management. He cannot play every game, nor should he.
It's a shame. If that's an undoing here, then that's sad. Because, yeah, as a player, I think he's great. And I hope wherever he lands, it feels like this is inevitable now. Wherever he lands, I hope he gets a chance to like really get a consistent run of games, because I think he's excellent. So we'll see. And finally, JJ, we do want to talk about the Everton Nottingham Forest situation.
Yeah. So where do you want to start with this?
Well, they've both been charged.
Yes.
And now face potential punishment for breaking the PSR, profit and sustainability rules that the Premier League that has laid out. And I think it's important to note, as was the case last time, I think there was some confusion for people with Everton, because now this is twice in just a couple months where they have been hit with this. So the most basic thing to remind everyone of is that these punishments happen in 3-year increments. You're basically, your finances are judged over a 3-year span. The 10-point deduction that Everton received were for a 3-year span. And then this next one was they've handed in their finances for the next year. Like, now we move into the next 3 years.
Yes. And they're still
in the red. And breaking and falling afoul of the PSR. And so they continue, and it feels to them like this is a little bit of double jeopardy, being punished for the same crime twice. And feel a little bit for them, because I think that there is, the way this is set up is you can have a year where you do everything wrong and you're punished for it. But if you try to do everything right in the times since then, like if you fall into a well, JJ, you don't get out of that well as quickly as you got into it. You have to yell and scream for someone to hear you. You have to try to climb out. Like, I feel like that's a little bit of the situation that Everton are trying to climb out of. They haven't gone wild spending since what they initially did to get them into this situation. And they can't get out of it as quickly as they got in. And they continue to get dinged for it. And so I do, in that way, I have a little bit of sympathy for them. Not a ton, because they made those decisions and they've been managed horribly, and they always knew that these rules existed. They're there. Maybe they didn't take them seriously. Maybe they thought that they'd win a lot and that was naive.
Right.
They made those conscious decisions and they did this. There's no like maybe here. Like, they're not going to go on trial and we'll find out if it happened or didn't. It happened.
No, and I think it's important and that's the point to be made. Can we listen to, so I was listening to the Athletics podcast with David Ornstein, Matt Slater yesterday, and the point that Matt Slater made, and it's important that people hear this, is that it's not up for debate whether Everton acted beyond profit and sustainability. They did. We'll take a listen to it here.
This idea that these are alleged charges, right? Or that that's not quite how this system works. It really is an adding up exercise. Forest and Everton have accepted their breaches. They've accepted, right? They've handed their submission in and go, yeah, we're over. There is no allegation. What we have now is a conversation around mitigation, right? Sorry, Your Honour. Yeah, we're over your limit. Of course we are. Here's our numbers. Everyone could see it. However, this is why we're over.
So we're like Matt says, we're in the moment of mitigation here, where Everton will explain the circumstances around how this happened. But it's not up for debate whether they broke the rules or not. They did break the rules. Now, who could be surprised at Nottingham Forest? I mean, why didn't we even call this earlier?
Well, I think with them, this falls in. We've talked for many years, JJ, on the show about, in this sport especially, like, if you feel like something looks a little weird, trust your gut on it.
Yeah,
it probably is. There's probably something.
I mean,
not
could
right
you
there.
Believe what they were doing last season and even into this season? Could you wrap your head around it?
Like, Copa 90, JJ, they put out a tweet listing all the players that have been signed by Forest from the summer of 22 through today. They've signed 43 players without very many outgoings. I mean, like, And by the way, that's part of what's up for debate here is like Brennan Johnson was one of their big outgoings, but that may fall outside of the 3-year period that's being judged here.
So, again, on the Athletic podcast, which is very good and does explain things in clear terms, because some of this does get a little bit confusing, especially when you see it's like a double whammy for Everton. You know, Everton and Forest, I think it was Adam Crafton also on the pod pointed out, they're being punished for a lack of strategy. Like, the owners of Forest acted in a scattergun approach with no strategy. Bring in as many players. We need players to stay up. Bring in as many as we can get. There was no strategy, and now they're paying for it. And Everton, under the previous administration, under the previous owners, acted in the same fashion. Mashiri, you know, you say, well, you see something in the sport, it doesn't look right, trust your gut. A lot of what Everton was doing didn't look right.
Yeah.
It just didn't. We saw these, like we always refer to it as like this Frankenstein monster hobbled together.
And by the way, it's also why I'd be worried about Chelsea. This is also a trust your gut, something here doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
So we'll see with them too.
Yeah, so none of this is really surprising. And another good thing that the Athletic podcast did was because much of this is framed by the 115 charges against Manchester City. Mm. And to simplify this, and it's something we haven't done enough, they're not the same thing. So what Everton and Forest have been charged for, as Matt Slater and the guys pointed out, is that basic addition. They've spent too much and they haven't balanced their books correctly. And they are, in, as you said, in the red. That's what's happened. Manchester City, the accusation is subversion, lying, cheating. That's what they're being accused of. And that is something that takes longer and is more, how would you put it? You need to be more robust if you're going to bring that charge. And you need to be able to prove that charge. Absolutely. And in the case of City as well, there's also the inflation of sponsorship fees. They subverted the rules by inflating sponsorship fees coming into the club. So this is how they could pay for that because the sponsorship fee was X, but it wasn't really. Mm. And that money was back-channeled. And you're not just fighting Everton Football Club PLC or Nottingham Forest, whatever. You're fighting a nation state. So there may be frustration with fans that this is taking so long, but these are two totally different charges. What we're seeing with Everton and Forest is like the purest form of making sure your books balance within the considerations and the rules of the profit and sustainability. That's what we're seeing here. With Manchester City, what we're seeing is much more fundamental.
And could be punished much more severely.
Much more severely. Much more severely.
Yeah. With regards to Everton, so I thought this was interesting from Alan Myers at Sky Sports, who talked about them, and he says, the club is at quite possibly the most significant crossroads of its history right now, fighting with every ounce of energy to stay in the top flight, oversee a takeover of the club, and move into a brand new stadium, one which they see as the key to its future success. Many at the club feel they are not only fighting all those challenges, but also the establishment. While there's an acceptance of we could have done better, there's also a real sense that they're trying to do the right thing, not only for themselves, but for the Premier League status as the greatest league in the world. However, they also feel that several clubs have had the benefit of doing all that before the current restrictions were imposed, and now it is a near impossible job for any club trying to join the party at the top. I think there is some truth to that. I really do. And that's why I was going to, like I mentioned earlier, I think Newcastle are in the process of maybe learning that lesson, that with these current financial guardrails that are in place, the Premier League is in a dangerous place right now where there are a select few clubs who got in while the getting was good, solidified their status, and now this is how it's going to be. And we might have years where, yes, somebody finds their way in, but it's not sustainable long term. And in the end, it's going to be a select few club. There are only a few clubs that can win in the Premier League. And I think that that's right now we're all still like, it doesn't feel like there's outrage over it, but at a certain point, it's, I know for you, you've used the term boring before, yeah. even with regards to some of the Man City Liverpool title yeah. races, which have been compelling and they're great teams, but the inevitability of it all. And I think that this is a danger that the Premier League and a lot of other leagues, quite frankly, are already in. But the Premier League now is entering that space, I think. There's only a few teams that feel like they can win, and Everton, I think, is pointing that out here, and Newcastle might be learning that lesson as well.
And maybe this was always the way it was going to be, even going back to 1992. Maybe this was... When the breakaway Premier League was formed, I mean, it was formed basically by the top clubs, and the top clubs really wanted it. And why did they want it? Well, they wanted more profits. They wanted to ring fence their status. And every year or every few years afterwards, I mean, even 2016, when the top six at the time voted that they would get a larger cut of the TV revenues coming in. You know, everything right. has been done towards that. And this is probably the inevitable conclusion. Now, there's more worthy cases than Newcastle United, who are owned by, you know, a sure. massive, you know, but
they're going to be the best example of it because they have more money than everyone in the league, but they can't use that power.
But look at the casualties along the way, Andrew, of this story. You know, we're focusing on, oh, hey, look at Everton. You can say Forest 20 years in the wilderness was almost a, you can see that as a cautionary tale.
Leeds.
Leeds United. But don't, like, there's cases beyond Leeds. Look at Bolton Wanderers recently, or relatively recently in the Premier League. Look at the way they've fallen apart. Reading. Like, look at the state of Reading right now. Fans running onto the field, getting a game suspended in the EFL Championship or EFL League One because of the owners. Miguel Delaney's piece still rings with me from 2019 about, again, everything has been channeled toward the Premier League. Even the rise of Wrexham, what was their aim? As much as you say their aim is to build up this football club, this one-storied football club, and bring them back to where they should belong. I mean, Ryan Reynolds talks about the Premier League. There's this funnel of everything towards the Premier League. And clubs take massive gambles to do that. Huge, enormous gambles. I mean, Burnley took a gamble. It's worked out so far, but they're going to have to repeat the trick next season. And there's no guarantees that it will be a successful second time round. And then what state are they in financially? All we see is stories of teams up and down the Football League who have made that gamble to get to the very top in the Premier League and failed. Because the money, the riches, everything that's available there. And that's why it's so, so important for these clubs to stay up there. Because once the parachute payments stop, after a few years, or two unsuccessful, or three unsuccessful seasons of trying to get back up, then your club is in dire straits. English football is fundamentally broken right now. And we need something radical, something really, really radical to save football in terms of finances, or else, yeah, it's going to be boring and only a few amount of teams can win it. And the disenfranchised will not just remain out in the cold. They potentially will go out of business.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah, I don't know what the new, I mean, you say something, you know, some radical new change. What would that, I mean, salary cap? Like, I don't think we'll ever see anything like that. You know, I look at baseball with their luxury tax, how that resets when you go under it.
I think that's all, that has to all be on the table now. And I would have been against it originally, but I think that all has to come onto the table now. Whether clubs will be willing to do that is another thing, and I would doubt it.
Yeah, I mean, look, the salary cap is the only true way to create real parity, if that's what they're after. I don't know that that's what they're after. But I will say that for anyone who thought, like, you know, all the time we talk about financial fair play. Oh, ha ha, yeah, that's a real thing. Ha ha ha. This PSR in England, I think we're finding out that this is real. They're not messing around with this. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
We're in the early stage of this and the charges. And Everton are still, by the way, fighting the last charges.
Yeah.
So we have to see how that works out. We have to see There's so much. Yeah, we are only at the beginning of this. But
there will be resolution fairly soon, because the Premier League has said that they will not accept basically the season ending and then point deductions being handed out retroactively. They want everything settled before then, so everyone knows what they're playing for.
Well, let's see exactly what that means then.
Yeah, we should say. I mean, look, if Everton got 10 points, like, is that just has the precedent been set? That's what you get. Because if that's the case, then Nottingham Forest are in real trouble. They're 15th right now on 20 points. If they go down to 10 points, they'll be in 19th, just one up on Sheffield United. And Everton, are they going to get another 10-point hit? You know, they survived the first one, but they're 17th right now on 17 points. They get down to 7 points, I think then it becomes more real to say goodnight to that club in the Premier League. So we'll see. It's a bit of a frightening time for those clubs and anyone else who's looking at their finances right now from a couple years ago and thinking, uh-oh, we're going to have to submit this soon in this three-year period. And I'm worried about it. Chelsea, and we'll see what happens with City as well. JJ, that's about all I got. You got anything else?
No. But I tell you what, this podcast has made me feel better. And isn't that what we're all looking for in these troubled times?
They say that the best medicine is a good podcast.
They say, yeah, inject it straight into me is what the kids say.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad that you're feeling better. So what happens? Are you just in bed?
I'm going to go. I have a couple of things to do, and I'm going to go for, I'm out of the bed now. I'm going to go for a big walk.
That
always helps me. It's 19 degrees, but
it's
so that's
so cold out.
Obviously the perfect time for a big walk.
And it's very windy too.
I love it. Love it.
Yeah, I don't mind
after
cold.
What I've been through, you think, I love the wind. I love the cold.
The wind is what makes it a little bit intolerable. Cold, whatever. I can deal with that. But it's the wind that really, I don't know. That's tough. Today's Jack's birthday. So happy birthday to my oldest son. He turns 8 today. I have a question for all the animals out there before we go. So like I mentioned, we talked about how he got a Nintendo, and one of his friends for his birthday, the game that he wanted was Minecraft, which I've never played. And I think it's an old game, but it's had this like revival. Like he watches YouTube videos of like kids playing it basically.
Uh-oh.
And so he's very into it.
Next thing you know, he'll be watching iShow Speed.
So he's very into it.
Oh, God.
But here's my problem with it. And I'm asking the animals for help, because I honestly need parental advice here. I don't know how to handle video game obsession. And like already he's had it for 2 days, and already I can see there's a possible problem brewing here. And the problem is like when you play a sports video game, JJ, there's a convenient end point. If he's playing EAFC, I can say, okay, when this, you got one game here, when this is over, you come upstairs and you do your homework or whatever. In games like Minecraft, they're designed to be addictive. There is no end. There's no, okay, I got to the end of this level. There's no, okay, you beat the final boss, the game, like it just goes on and on and on and on. You're building a world and you interact, and like
my parents lost
it. Like, I don't know how to, so we try to give time limits, and sometimes he's fine and he listens. Other times it's hard, and I'm just looking ahead and I'm seeing fights. And so
you have to accept there will be fights.
Well, that's a tough accept. The goal is to try to avoid that as much as possible.
Happening.
So
forget about it.
I'm going. I'm turning to the animals here. I know this is the right place to go in times of parental help and advice.
You know what? I'm not going to say anything else. I won't even give my opinion on this until the animals will start a thread, and we'll read the thread in the next podcast, and we'll decide that's the way we should live our lives from now on. All decisions, relationships, financial, parenting.
Yeah,
everything goes to the animals. They create a group. They thread about it, and at the end of the day, we take their consensus, and we do all our decisions that way from now on.
Yep. But you know, so tonight he has his little, we'll make a little birthday dinner for him, and we asked him, well, what do you want? What are your favorite foods? You know, what do you want? This is the birthday dinner that we're having tonight.
Wow.
Ramen noodles and bacon.
Oh, fantastic!
That's all he wants.
Fantastic.
All right, let's do it.
Ramen noodles and bacon. I love it.
Yeah. Bacon on the side, not like in the ramen.
Well, you could do it. You could break an egg.
Bacon makes everything better. It's true.
Oh, I don't eat pork anymore.
Oh,
that's another one. That's another one that we should discuss. Wow. A decision I made without the animals, I will say.
Oh, wow. All by yourself.
Or maybe for the animals. Da, 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 da.
I enjoyed this immensely. The store is open. Go out, get your shirts. And we'll keep our eyes open to see when those winter hats, they'd be coming in handy right now for that big walk you're about to take. It is damn cold. We'll have another pod. I don't know when our next pod is going to be, actually.
Messed the whole schedule up. I guess it'll be early next week.
We'll have another one. Like, there are more coming. I just can't tell you exactly when. But keep your feeds refreshed. Go to the store and keep voting, too, for the Sports Podcast Awards because, well, I guess that is a fan-based award, JJ. So if we win it, I can't take it seriously. I'm sorry. It's...
We're not beating Gary Neville.
I've dug a hole. I've backed myself into a corner. An award that we could potentially win, I'll have to just shun it. But still vote, because it would quietly make me feel very good about myself and the work we do here. JJ, feel better. To you, I say...
Check you later, phone boy.
I'll see you.
Take care, guys.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.